We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games.
This is Season 1, Episode 31, movie Alita Battle Angel for January 16, 2021.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
This means a lot to us. We hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen to as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at SciFiRemnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family.
And before we continue with the show, here are our sponsors and collaborators.
Hello, potential listeners. My name is The Vern, and I'm the host of the Cinema Recall Podcast. On most shows, myself, along with some great guests, we will talk about a movie and then some of the most iconic moments that happened in said movie. On top of that, you'll get bonus shows where I will give you short reviews about new and classic movies, or I'll just rant and rave about something going on in the entertainment industry. So come check us out. We're available on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, most other places. Don't forget to follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at @cinema_recall. And then on Facebook, Instagram, we are Cinema Recall Podcast. Don't forget to email us your ad spots to play on future episodes. That email is cinemarecall@gmail.com. Hope to see you around, and thank you very much for listening.
Welcome back again, everyone, to Science Fiction Remnant. Today, we have a very exciting episode for me. I really like this movie. I want to speak about Alita Battle Angel.
I don't think you've seen this before I mentioned it. I don't think you even were aware that this was a thing.
No, but at the same time, you know that I'm an anime lover. I actually used to watch animes that you know about that were actually before I was born. And I'm like...
Yeah, I mean, there's some animes that you have shown me that are from my time that I never even knew it was a thing. So when I told you about this one, I was a little surprised you haven't seen it. But then again, this is one of those that is a little obscure.
You can think about it. And the other thing is, I mean, where I come from, anime, adults look at it like, oh, that's cartoons, you know? Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that not all anime, it's for kid. Okay, exactly. Actually, if you put any kind of anime to your kid, you can scar the kid for life.
Yeah. This one, and especially this one, Alita, it was, I think it's Gun, G-U-N-N-M,
okay,
that was released. That was the actual manga that was running from 1990 to 1995. It was a 9-volume, and they turned it into anime, and I believe they did exactly like that. There was nine episodes for that. And you could actually, if you look it up, Battle Angel Alita.
Just Alita. If you search Alita full movie, you can find it on YouTube, actually. Yeah. Now, it's funny that you mentioned that it was separated in anime just like in the manga. Because when I was watching, there's just like an intermission right in the middle of the hour movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just two parts.
Yeah. Well, there's like, if you watch the original, there's going to be 9 parts. So I wonder if you watched it, because I think what they have done is they have grabbed all the 9 parts and put it into one. So I wonder if that's probably the one that you watched. When I watched it, it was 9 parts.
Okay.
But this one, it's really, this is definitely not for kids. Anime.
Most animes are not for kids.
But this one, the anime was very bloody. Although you see a little bit of that come through in the movie.
It's vanilla compared to the anime.
Exactly. It's very,
let's be honest.
Very, very vanilla. It's one of my favorites. And I remember when they announced this movie, I was really excited to actually see it live action. And when I see this, in live action, I thought, and you know, now that you've seen it, you could probably tell me this, but I think they did a great job converting anime into live action.
To be honest with you, it's one of the few conversions, either from anime or from a book, that I can tell you they did a 10-10 job, a five-star job, you know, because it didn't stick scene by scene to mm-hmm. the movie of the anime. Mm-hmm. Still, they did a great job on blending it in and making it a total success of its own.
Yeah.
And follow the story to the letter, to the foot of the letter, you know?
I was really surprised because part of the reason, you know, that we're talking that this, they did a great job in converting this, that part of that is the visual. And visual on this movie had a very, what was the word that I'm looking for? It's controversial because of the eyes.
Yeah.
And people were like, they're half, I remember reading when, before this movie came out through the theaters, when they were showing the trailers and how people were complaining that the main star, Alita, has huge eyes. And I remember when I was reading all this, you know, comments, negative comments, because there were negative comments about the movie. I remember thinking, oh my God, please don't change it because of those. Because you know what happened to Sonic? But Sonic was a valid point. You know, that was a valid point there. He looked,
Changed from creepy to nice.
Exactly. But this one, the big eyes, where that's exactly how it is in the anime.
But here's the thing. In the anime, you don't really realize that much because everybody has anime-looking eyes. Mm-hmm. What they did on the movie, and this is what I'm telling you, it was a total success making it a blend of its own, is they make it look like everybody from where Alita comes from looks like her. Mm-hmm. So it kind of depicts a race.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
So I think it was at the same time brilliant what they did when it comes to her eyes, because it makes her unique and it kind of gives her ancestry away.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm trying to think, but I think this movie was the very first collaboration between Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron.
Yes, that's true.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else there, but I think this is the first collaboration. Of course, James Cameron collaborated as a writer. I'm sure that he, you know, because Roberto Rodriguez was the director. Mm-hmm. But there was a big collaboration in this movie.
Yeah, you had the producers that were James Cameron and Jon Landau. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that the three of them did a great job. The budget for this movie, I don't know if you knew, was $170 million. Do you know how much he made?
Go ahead.
$405 million.
So you know they did a good job.
Oh my God.
You know, that spoke, that right there, that speaks.
And I mean, the movie is packed with everything. It has drama. It has, I mean, honestly, man, it's like looking to epic fight anime all over. Every time there's a fight, you look into that epic fight that when you were watching anime, you were wait months till they get to the final boss and they get this fight. Yeah. You got those fights all over. So it's just like, wow, all the time.
That's another part. I mean, if you, and for all of you out there, if you love anime, this is one of the awesome things about this movie is that I felt, and I don't know if you felt the same way too, but I felt when I was watching this, like I was watching live action anime.
Yep.
Especially the fight scenes.
Live action anime, but I'll tell you, at the same time, and this is not a boo against live action anime, most of them do not achieve the perfection when it comes to action parts. Mm-hmm. You can see more choreography. You can see more like the fake kicks and stuff like that. Like, for example, Rurouni Kenshin, the movie, it's cool. Yeah. But the sword fights, they are not as great, you know, because they are mostly choreography. But here, it's like you're watching the real deal going down, you know?
Yeah. You know, another thing that I don't know if you're wondering, and you probably don't realize it too much, but the manga and the anime, the original source material, the name was actually Battle Angel Alita. And I always wonder, I mean, maybe it's me nitpicking, why was Alita Battle Angel? But apparently, I think, who was it? Was it, I think it was either, no, I think it's James Cameron.
Okay.
The movies that he does, no, the producer, John Londo, I think it was. He was telling that James Cameron only do T and A movies. And I was thinking, you know, what does that mean? And then kind of go through the movies that James Cameron's have done. You know, like example, Aliens, that's an A. Terminator, that's a T.
Yeah.
The Abyss, that's A. Avatar, that's A. True Lies, that's T. Titanic was T. So I was like, okay, so they're saying that he...
The title has to be a T or an A in the beginning?
Exactly. So that's he kind of changed it around. So now when you look at this movie, is Alita Battle Angel instead of Battle Angel Alita. I always find that to be a little curious. Well,
James Cameron had to let us know if he has a bet with somebody that he would have to do all the movies with TNAs.
But have you noticed that?
He's a very curious,
notice that until someone brought it up. And I was like, you know what? You're kind of right. I mean, I'm going through all the movies that he had done and they're, you know, either A's or T's.
Now I'm curious if that was a bet go wrong.
I don't know. I figure I mentioned it to you because I find that really curious. And if you don't know about Robert Rodriguez, Robert Rodriguez, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he actually became famous after he did, in my opinion, I mean, I might be wrong here, but here in America, he becomes famous for the very first movie I remember is El Mariachi.
With Antonio Banderas?
Yes.
Oh, Desperados.
Yeah, so he did Desperado. He did From Dusk Till Dawn and Machete.
Machete, and man.
Sin City and your favorite, Spy Kids.
Spy Kids. Come on, man. Give me a break. That's one of those movies I kind of forget watching. I kind of regret watching.
So yeah, he's to me, these two people are iconic in the movie industry, and it shows in the box office that their collaboration, you know, this movie is amazing.
It is.
It's amazing.
Honestly, it's a movie that you cannot pick flaws on. That's my view on it. And I mean, you and I watch, I think that there's already a trailer out for a second part.
I wish. I haven't seen it, but oh my god.
We've seen so I for some reason I kind of can't picture images of seeing Alita kind of like in an assembly line or something. Like things that we have not watched of the movie. So I think that we already watched that trailer. I don't remember at this point right now. But people are pretty excited about having a part two because I mean the way that the movie ends just gives you more to come, you know? But, I mean, this movie, like, to backtrace to the beginnings of it, is about this doctor, Dr. Ido. Mm-hmm. And basically, he's like the Mother Teresa of of the slum. So he picks everybody for scrap or for trade. Yeah, he has a bunch of taps open on the city.
And I have my opinions on that. I wonder, because he is from that city. He came down. Well, actually, he was forced down because his daughter had an illness.
Yes.
So he took his wife with him. Then I guess the daughter died through an accident. You know, someone tried to steal medicine or drugs from. So in the process, the daughter died, and the wife left him because it wasn't too apparent from the movie or the anime, but you kind of get a sense that she was, you know, she didn't really want to leave that city in the sky. And she had kind of like a bad feeling for the, you know, kind of...
Like a grudge?
Like a grudge against Ido. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, obviously she left him. But I wonder if Ido is doing all this because he was a very famous, I believe a very famous surgeon back in the City in the Sky. And he kind of felt bad for these people, the people on the ground, because they don't have anything.
I have my own theory about that.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically examining him and his character,
mm-hmm.
I think that at the same time, he might feel bad or something because of the people that live down. But sometimes, and I've seen this in many documentaries, movies that depict this experience, and most of us actually have been in a place like that in our lives. But it doesn't matter how good you're doing in life, sometimes you actually can feel like everything is repugnant. Because you can see it's all built on lies,
yeah.
or it's built over somebody else's blood or somebody else's effort that you didn't have to put through.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets to a person that actually is like a corrosive feeling that makes you feel nauseous about all your surroundings and makes you want to just run away from it. So yeah. I feel like Dr. Idol, like that's what I felt from him, the reason why he left the city.
Okay.
Is like, imagine, I mean, they couldn't do anything for his daughter.
Yeah.
After everything that he, how celebrated surgeon he was or how good he was at what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And still he couldn't save her. So he was like, okay, I'm going somewhere where I can do something better.
Yeah.
For this world. Because this place is just fake pretty city mm-hmm. built on lies.
Yeah. And you can see how much he loved his daughter, that the robot suit that he made her.
It's like a freaking sculpture.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So, yeah, this movie is very, a little bit deep, if you think about it.
Yeah, it is.
We are met with... I guess at the beginning of the actually in both the anime, the manga, and the movie, Dr. Daisen Ito is going through basically the garbage.
And I don't know if you know this fact, but you know who was Dr. Dyson's father?
Mm.
The one that invented the Dyson vacuum cleaner. Just kidding.
No, maybe this guy is, you know, because this movie was based in 2360. What was it? 23? Let me check real quick. This is 2563, the year 2563. So maybe this is a great, 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 you know, grandson of, you know, Dyson.
They're just in a time where they don't need vacuum cleaners because they just come out of the tip of your fingers.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, he's going through for the same reasons that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, he's fixing everybody in the cities for free. No one, it's not that he's doing it for free because, it's because people over there just don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them how he's getting paid in fruit.
That's what I told you. I just literally call it the Mother Teresa of the slum because, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. It's kind of obscene.
Mm-hmm.
Like this city is sitting on the sky and it's literally pooping trash on top of the slum.
Yeah, so all the trash from the city just goes down on the slum.
Exactly. And literally there's a big hole in the middle of the bottom of the city where just crap comes down raining on it.
Yeah.
On its scrapyard that is gigantic. Yep. So I mean just the side of it, I find kind of kind of ironic
uh-huh.
that people below dream to go up there while they're living the consequence of what's being up there and what does to other living beings.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me on a philosophical point of the manifesto, you know, the proletarians and the bourgeoisies. The bourgeoisies are up there. And what's a proletarian? It's a working class that is always stuck on the rut
mm-hmm.
that... their dream is to become the guys that keep the ones below.
And that's pretty much what's happening in here too. Because all these people in the city, they're producing the food, they're producing everything that the people at the City of the Sky needs. They produce, and that's why they have those huge pipes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where the goods are being transported up.
Yep.
So it's exactly the same. So. Yeah, I mean, so going back to what I was saying, because he can't get paid, he can't really get, you know, parts because, you know, parts cost money. So what he's forced to is going through the garbage. So, you know, so he can find the parts.
Yeah, spare parts, right?
The spare parts to help the people because he can't buy those.
Mm-hmm. And so it kind of makes sense. I mean, he has to produce something of salvage so he can offer material to these people he's helping out. And I don't know, as you can see, you got people that need all sorts of things. They have limbs that are missing completely or stop working.
Yeah. So I don't know if you do you agree that Rosa Salazar, which is the star that plays Alita in this movie, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I think she made Alita.
I would think she did. To be honest with you, she may, again, everything in this movie happened on a way. It's like it's reborn on its own from the material.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, she, I don't know, I like to think that she, you know, obviously either read the original material or watched the original anime, but she made it her own in a way that I don't see anybody else
playing Alita.
Playing Alita.
I agree with you.
You know, I wanted to ask you that because, you know, I don't know if it's just me or she actually did this. Because the reason why I'm saying this is when they tested the people that would play Alita, some of the names that came together with Rosa Salazar were like Zendaya. I don't know if you remember Zendaya, which is the she was in Spider-Man.
Okay.
Micah Monroe and Bella Thorne. So, out of all of those, the only one that I cannot see close will be Zendaya, but not to this level.
No, not to be honest with you.
I think I have to give my hats off to the casting for casting Rosa in here. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because that is just one more proof that the success of a movie, in my opinion, is the perfect combination, kind of like a recipe.
The perfect formula.
Yeah. So you have to have, I mean, you can have the perfect cast and the perfect story and still screw it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we kind of learned when we were watching the making of Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
It's the importance of the chemistry between the actor or actress and the character they play. They can be great actors and achieve it. That doesn't mean that really it's going to make a perfect chemistry with the character of the story,
yeah,
which is a whole personality on its own. Whoa, that word was
yeah.
so yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like she made Alita one of her signature characters.
Okay. Another thing that it brought my attention, and I don't know if James Cameron, I have a feeling this is more of a Roberto Rodriguez thing. But I think I read that he is a fan of the original source material. So when you watch this movie and you compare it to the anime, for example, you will actually find many scenes that are exact replicas of the original anime.
And you know that's become a disappointment of the millennial when somebody tries to make a live action version of an anime.
Mm-hmm.
It's when they do not stick too much to the main story. And something that you and I were discussing when we were watching it the last time, but even on its own way, you can see the same scenes and still they're not the same as the anime.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like they do stick to the main story, but they made their own blend out of it.
Yeah.
So it's like it's still an original piece of work.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get, you know, directors and, you know, whenever you're making a movie, sometimes, you know, books, manga, anime, all this stuff doesn't translate well into live action. And I get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all about the money, obviously. So they got to make sure that they make a product that is good enough that people will spend money on it.
And, so, and at the same time, they make it a product that is not expressively aimed to a very small portion of the public. Mm-hmm. It has to be attractive for all kind of audiences.
Exactly, exactly. Not only that, but you have to make sure like everything translates. And because, you know, if you have a good product, you have the possibility of making more money out of that product by making, you know, maybe a part two, maybe a TV series.
Yeah.
You know? So I get it, but it's very refreshing to find someone that actually can make it happen. Mm-hmm. They can make the original material close enough, because obviously it's impossible to make it exactly the same.
Of course.
Close enough that it's profitable. Because this movie made $400 million.
That's beyond doubt. They did achieve that.
So it is obvious they made it happen. And it's very refreshing because you don't see that very often.
It's true. It's true.
I really like that. So going back to the story, he takes, you know, he finds this young girl in the trash and he brings her to his office.
Maybe
decided to fix her. And I wonder if it's because of his nature or because he sees some kind of kinship with her, where he's, you know, he sees she's discarded.
Yeah.
She dropped through the garbage. So he feels as discarded as she was because of what happened and how he had to leave the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so he took her to fix her. Also, you know, he lost a daughter. So maybe this is just his way of saving another young girl when he couldn't save his own?
I think so. And something that I was thinking too is, if you think about it, he's one of the most redemptive characters in the series, if not the most. He expressed a lot of paternal instincts when he sees her. And at the same time, you see how compassionate he is in the way that he works with everybody. Plus, if you think about it, it might be something that it's a kind of corrosive for the place where he comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But coming from where he came, which is the city that is on the sky, he might see the tragedy of what may have happened to her. She was thrown away and he was over there. So he knows how everything operates over there, how everybody is, how fake, how it's built upon the suffering of others.
Which I was thinking about too. That's actually, it's still a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
For all of us who actually read the manga, watched the anime, even at that, even with the source material,
we don't know what the heck is up there.
Yeah, it's a mystery. We don't get any glances of what's, you know, what's going on. So, yeah, this I wonder. And the reason why I was saying that is because in the end of the movie, this movie seems to end on a possibility for a part two.
Oh, most definitely.
So the source material hasn't had a part two. There's no manga, there's no anime. So it makes you wonder if Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron decides to collaborate on a part two, they would have to bring the original creator in to make it original. I mean, I guess they could just create out of their own heads part two, but it would not be original.
Well, it will be original if you think about it.
Well, what I meant, I'm using the wrong...
It might not stick to the main story, but if you think about it, if there's not a main story, they're just giving us that price of finishing that story for us.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I mean, the reason why I'm saying that is because sometimes when you have someone else write a story, and then other than the original creator of the story, and this is assuming this is not an enterprise, kind of like Star Wars or Star Trek that has a lot of canon stories.
Mm-hmm.
The story doesn't feel
natural
to the original story when it's someone else writing it.
I could agree with you on that. The only thing is that since there's a first movie already drawn up for it, and they're making a continuation of it, the narrative and the storyline is already set up.
Well,
so it's like they're often, it's like I would say, even if they don't collaborate with the original writer of the story, it's like they're giving the fans closure on a story that never was provided with.
You bring right there, you bring a good point, because I was thinking there's no precedence.
No.
So the main actor, I mean, the main writer to the story did not have a part two. So for all we know, anything that anyone comes up with as a part two, if they follow the story, will feel natural.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to put a big sample. Not really sci-fi, but I don't know if you've heard of the writer Sidney Sheldon.
Hmm.
He writes a lot of real fiction, mystery, and murder stories. Great, great writer.
Okay.
He died, and he has this writer called Tilly Bradshaw. She actually has finished some of his books and made some of her own. And they're just as good as Sidney Sheldon's material. It would be like somebody will grab Tolkien's book and give you a side story on, like, you know that at the end, Legolas and Gimli go on a quest through the whole Middle-earth to get to know it, but you don't really get much material on it. Imagine that somebody grabs a story and makes a whole story out of it, and still it stay on the topic of the background story that follows them.
Yeah.
So it's not like you see, oh, this is not original material, you know?
Yeah.
So I will feel that as long as it's a good work made, it's not something that will really jeopardize the integrity of the writing work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it will depend a lot on who does that job, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of wondering work in that because there's no precedent. So you can only hope that the people that bring the next phase of the story, they do a good job in writing it. And then you also hope that the recipe for a part two could be duplicated.
Yes, definitely.
Because, I mean, that's partly the reason why you hear that, part two is never better than part one on a movie. It's because there is a bigger chance that they can replicate that recipe. And obviously, there's exception to the rule, you know?
Of course.
But most likely, you could see how it would be... there is a possibility you can't duplicate that recipe for a part two.
Yeah. And I mean, and I'll tell you something. One of my favorite actors ever, which is the bad guy, Nova, which is portrayed by Edward Norton.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is the most fantastic actor. One of them, one of my favorite actors. Like, I love his work. He did Fight Club. He did The Illusionist. I mean, he's done so many great movies. So I would love to see how it turns out on a second part, where he probably is going to have a lot more of screen time, because if you think Nova really doesn't show up,
they
show a couple of pictures of him, and probably he doesn't even have a full minute on screen
There's only one scene when you can see his face.
Yeah.
Only one scene.
So, I mean, it probably is going to be very, very interesting to see how this story develops and see him actually carrying on this role again.
And I'm sure we're not alone here. And for all of those of you who actually watched the movie, we all want to see that city. We have no clue, you know, how we can estimate and see, but, you know, we don't know how the social interaction, we don't know nothing.
No, I mean, there's so many things. And again, going back to the main story that we were talking about, he actually grabs Alita and he fixes her up, and she gives to Alita the body that he had for his daughter. Because I don't know if you remember, but his daughter was paralyzed.
Yes.
On a wheelchair. So he was planning of transferring her upper torso probably into this mechanical body. And then you see Alita kind of rediscovering herself and the world around her.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. And it's one of the things that many people that work in the technology field right now are trying to learn, is how an AI can discover the world and perceive it just as a child.
Yeah.
To make that the learning process. Because what we have come to draw of AI and learning processes, we're trying to starting to mimic the human evolution learning process in order to make them as good or better than us.
Yeah.
And you can see that depicted in her behavior as she discovers flavors, and feelings. And
that, I think that's what makes her character a lot more endearing when you to watch. Because, you know, we're watching a child discovering everything at the beginning. You know, like, what is this? I mean, what does this taste like? What is this? Oh, this is amazing. So, and then it's kind of like, I don't know if I think I read this somewhere. It's kind of like the puppy dog eye effect.
Yes.
You know, you have a puppy dog, you know, big bright eye. So you have
You can help fulfill when you see her like, oh.
Exactly. She has big eyes. And not only that, but she's acting like that. She's like a child discovering everything. So you can't help to go, oh, you know, when you see her. And then, you know, she grows up real fast.
Yeah, no. And I mean, you discover real quick. She sees the doctor going into his late night walks.
Yes.
So she kind of discovers that part of the doctor's life that he's a hunter's layer.
I remember the first thing that she noticed was when he came in one night and he was hurt.
Yes.
He was bleeding. So she was concerned. So the following night, she decides to follow him. And this is when she has a culture shock and discovers, oh, he's not as tender as I see him every day to be. Because he sees, actually, she has the wrong idea, because he sees him about to hammered. By the way, that hammer is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It has cool. like a jet engine on one side. So it turns it on and just, oh. So
I need me one of those.
So she sees him about to hit this woman with this hammer. Obviously, for her, is overkill. Because for her, she doesn't see quite what this thing is. And she visualizes this is just a normal woman in the street about to be hit by a hammer with a jet engine at the end. That's going to be messy. So she gets in the way to stop this. It's like, don't do this. And that's when not only Alita, but Dr. Ito discover. Well, Dr. Ito discovered this was a trap all along. And Alita discovers that, oh,
she's not saving really anyone. She's actually getting him into deep shit.
So this is, you know, I guess a turning point, because on this, during this scene, is when she gets glimpses of her past.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that she wants. She wanted to know from the beginning, from the moment that she woke up.
Yep.
She doesn't know what her name is. The name was given to him by Dr. Ito. She doesn't know nothing about the past. And now she gets these glimpses of what she was. And in her mind, they're brought up by her being an immediate danger.
Mm-hmm.
So now she wants to become just like Dr. Ito.
And that's a very human thing, if you think about it. If you think, it's what it's called in psychology, muscle memory.
Yes.
So it's things you know how to do, and doesn't matter how long it takes for you to do them again, your body already hasn't registered. It's like, if I don't ride a bike in 20 years, I know that 20 years from here, I'm going to get on a bike, and I'm going to remember how to ride that bike. I'm not going to need auxiliary little tires next to it, so I ride like Phoebe. So just like that, if you think about it, she already had all this experience from fighting, which I really like, because it's like she's not fighting some movie karate. She's actually fighting some badass mix of kung fu with tai chi.
Yes, yes. And it's kind of funny how they mentioned, because if you think about it, this robot body that Alita has is definitely not a weapon, and it was not created as a weapon. It was created for someone that couldn't walk with speed. And you know, that's another heartbreaking thing too. The original person that was supposed to get that body is a person that could never walk.
Yeah.
And Dr. Ito made this suit for this robot body for his daughter. So when she finally has it on, she can actually run fast.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was a little heartbreaking when we discovered this. But going back to the point, she's fighting these people with this body.
With a 14, 15-year-old kid's body.
And it's not, you know, granted.
And it looks very fragile, to be honest with you.
Exactly. So you know that it's all about the technique, the muscle memory. And at this moment, you kind of are forced to think that something, you know, something about her future, like, especially from the glances that you see from, there's a military training somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And this character is not who we think he is.
And they actually show in that first fight a scene where she got a flashback of a battlefield in the outer space.
Yeah. So that's the first, you know, at least when I saw the movie, when you see the movie, this is when you first realize, this is something that, this is someone that you don't want to mess with. You know, if she's able to cause that kind of damage on these people, on this, you know,
with this fragile tool, which is her body.
Exactly. You imagine what she could do with an actual real tool.
Yeah. And I mean, again, the fighting scenes are kick-ass.
Oh, yeah.
And then right when she kind of screws it up for the doctor, then she starts saving the doctor's ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this the fighting scenes are just live-action anime. It's what any anime lover would love to see.
And to be honest with you, from all live actions that I've watched, I can tell you thus far, this is the best one that I've ever watched. I mean, besides this, I can't compare it. And I mean, I cannot compare it with an anime because there wasn't an anime. But it's like, it's like watching Ready Player One.
Yeah.
Like, the fights are badass with great animated resources.
Yeah.
So it looks just super real.
Yeah. And you know, going through this movie and watching this movie, you can't help to think the technology behind it. You know, granted, this is, you know, sci-fi, but you see, like, you know, people that have amputated limbs, you know, they could get nowadays. And it's incredible too. So if I would go back in time and tell myself, maybe 10 years into the past, that that someone that maybe had an arm amputated could have the type of arms that they can get nowadays, I would probably call myself a liar. So it makes me wonder if the combination of AI and the machine and some sort of technology that could link up that limb to the brain could actually create all the sensory perceptions in the arm enough to make it feel real. Because when you watch this movie, you get the sense that although these people have limbs of metal, they have some sort of like touch.
So I didn't perceive that from everybody, but I did perceive that from the body armor that was made for Alita at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because he actually touches her hands and actually asks her if her tact, it's working properly.
Yeah.
And then if her motor functions are working properly.
But don't go that far. I mean, we all know that all that is Alita is her brain.
Mm-hmm.
So
everything else is artificial.
Exactly. So remember when he said, okay, you know, you're hungry, have this orange, and she bits on the orange. You know, with
shell, everything, with pill and everything.
Everything and all.
Gruesome
and,
shit.
And she's like, you know, like, this is disgusting. And it's like, well, I guess the taste sensations are working.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of technology, I can't help to think that it could be possible in the way that we're going.
Yeah. I actually was watching yesterday a documentary called The Thinking Machine. YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, 50 years back, they were saying about things that machines cannot do, like learn.
Yeah, and now they're learning.
Now they're learning on their own. I actually was watching an AI program that was made on the 40s or on the 50s with circuits that look like phone circuits. And this machine could type right a whole play. Then they will put you the play. It's a very simple play, but it still is an original piece of work that a machine made. And then the guy will show you different plays, like a cowboy and a gunsmith and a gunman. And they will show you different scenarios with the same background story, the cowboy and the gunman. But they will show you, and he actually runs smoothly. He doesn't look abnormal. And then they will show you an abnormal scene, and the guy will tell you it's an error and trial system, so the machine not always will get it right, but mm-hmm. It goes learning.
Yes. Yeah.
And it kind of gives you the picture of where this is going. And I mean, there's so many things that we already have nowadays, and we have spoken about this in many of the episodes that we have, where there's advanced technology, but that is modern science, is making reality out of science fiction stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have, and Back to the Future, you have a hovering board. You actually have boards that you can run on that they hover over the floor now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a matter of time and us using our creative power and our tools to make that possible.
And that is one thing that I wish it could become a reality soon. And I'm not only just me. I don't have a direct reason to wish this other than, you know, the better of humanity, where, you know, you have people that they have accidents, they lose their legs, and you can't help to wish that this technology could become a reality soon enough,
mm-hmm.
where you can have these people now get
walking and running and feeling the ground on their feet.
Exactly. Or someone that may lost maybe they lost their hand get an artificial hand where they can feel, mm-hmm. you know, they can touch, you know. Not only that, but I was always thinking too, there has to be some sort of temperature control. Because it would be kind of freaky if you touch your face and you feel this cold hand touching your face.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe a little warmth or control of warmth.
I think that it's going to be with that. And now we're going technical into the technologies. Mm-hmm. But it probably might not be necessarily a technical control, but a combination of not having a metallic surface as the hard parts mm-hmm. and having something latex-like.
Yeah.
That would basically some kind of semi-organic mm-hmm. material that would do the job of skin.
Yeah.
So if you don't have something metallic under the skin, your fingers are not going to be cold. They might not be warm and hot, but like if you're sitting on your fake hand, you're creating warmth on it. Mm-hmm. So depending on where you have it, you're creating warmth too. Just like what Wesley Allison shows on his book, his Robot Girlfriend, mm-hmm. these androids that he has on his story, they have heat sensors in their body to create warmth as a real mm-hmm. body.
And it makes you wonder if the part itself will have to have some sort of AI to help the body control. Like, you know, AI that would tell them, you know, oh, you just put a knife through your hand. Let me create pain to let you know that there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, you're touching your skin. Let me match up. What's the temperature of your body again? Okay, let me make my, you know, me, hand, the temperature of your body so it doesn't feel abnormal.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what Elon Musk is onto when he's doing his Neuralink.
Yeah.
Neuralink, right now is at the research stage, where when he says, okay, AI to assist the human brain, I think it has something to do with that.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily you're going to be linked. Well, it could be, but in my reasoning, I think that if you're creating devices to interface with a human body, they will have to have some sort of AI to help on making that part of more realistic.
I kind of agree with you, and at the same time, if you think about it, there is a possibility because the human body steals some sort of a machine.
Yes.
They call it the perfect machine. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, if you can find a way to really interlink the power functionalities of an external limb with your organism, it's already part of your body. And that means it's going to be even connected to your nervous system in some way.
Yeah.
And once it's connected to your nervous system, then you can feel it.
Yes. Yes.
You just have to have some kind of tact sensory motion into it. So if I touch with the tip of my wooden foot or plastic foot, mm-hmm. I actually am feeling the pressure on the ground in my toes, and it's all communicating as it communicates for movement with my other sensors in my body.
And it makes me feel that perception, that touch on the skin perception is necessary. Because can you imagine, you kind of need that when you're like, say, walking at the beach.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, the sand, you know, might go, it might break under your weight. So if you have that feel, you can control the force
mm-hmm.
or less force as you walk and you don't fall over. So it makes you wonder if that is something. And the reason why I say it makes you wonder is because I'm not in that situation, but it makes you wonder that would be extremely necessary to create something that a human can use as natural as having their own foot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back to the story, we have, she's remembering all this, right? So now she wants to become like Ito.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I want to ask you this. I think, do you really think it's like she says? Because, I mean, she kind of goes all over the place. She wants to become this bounty hunter. Mainly, and this is what he tells Dr. Ito, is because when she's placed in immediate danger, she can remember, or she may be able to remember more about her past. We also see her say to Hugo that she wants to make money so he can go to the city. So I kind of feel, you know, what is, I think our true motivation, number one motivation might be discovering who you are.
I think that it's a combination between that and her attachment to the doctor. She wants to help the doctor initially. If you think about it, and this, they did a great job on keeping it original from the anime to the movie.
Mm.
But she asked him to tell him why he became a Hunter Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her why. And then she says that she wants to do what he does.
Yeah.
And even though she does look up to him as a paternal figure, she and he knows she's not his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, it's like, I can look like a little girl. I don't know who I am, but I know what I'm about.
Yeah.
Because it's like when, how can I put it? It's like, you know, when somebody has a talent for something,
mm-hmm.
so you don't really have to give them training or prepare them. You just put them in there and they're in the zone. It's like she fighting, she's in the zone. And if you notice, as you learn from her and as they reveal her images of her past in flashbacks, it's like she was made for this.
Yes.
So it's like grabbing a mathematician and try to make him just do art.
Yes.
And he's going to be like, that's not my thing.
Yes.
Put me in a freaking lab.
Yeah.
Let me do calculus. Let me do new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way, I think that's what I absorbed from Alita. It's that she found what's her thing, what she's good at. And I mean, she actually put she ended up saving the doctor's ass.
Yes.
If she doesn't show up in that first scene, the doctor would have been grinding meat.
Definitely.
We know
definitely.
That.
So yeah, that was a very good point, because, you know, we know that this is what she does. And she, although forgot her past, got a feel for that.
Yes.
And realized and felt, this is natural. This is what I'm all about. So, therefore, I'm going to do it.
Exactly.
And
it's her calling, if you want to call it something.
Yeah. And then you have the doctor is being overly protected.
Yeah.
Because, again, you know, he lost his daughter. He sees Alita as a daughter and trying to protect her from this. Alita sees him as a father, wants to protect him from him, but she feels she is the only one that could do this.
And I mean, between you and I, you know that she is.
Yeah.
The doctor would have been eventually, and that's the thing, even he says it, he probably was hoping to get killed by somebody.
Yes.
It's some kind of hatred towards the past, some kind of quest for resolution and closure,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, he's hoping to stop existing.
Yes.
Because he has this sorrow that he's been carrying over for years and years.
Yes.
So it's like they found each other and they give each other a reason to continue to live.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that what you were asking about Ugo, I think that Ugo is more of an accessorial motive.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about it, and this was my perception of Alita, she doesn't really have a real value to the money she makes.
Yes.
So she doesn't, I'm not saying she doesn't give a shit about Ugo. You see that Ugo kind of discovers the world with her too.
Yes.
He takes her around the city. He shows her how to play the ball game that is a fucking barbaric.
You cannot help but look at the city in a different light. Noticing Alita's reaction to it. Because, I mean, you know how many times Hugo has gone around the city.
Yeah.
And you can't help but notice when he takes Alita through the city that he is actually looking at the city in a different light because of Alita's reaction to the city.
It's like he's falling in love again with the city.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, which I found sad, it's like he has his mind fixed like everybody down in the slum. He wants to go up there.
Yeah, like, you know, the grass is greener on the other side.
Exactly.
Not realizing, I mean, that something must be wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Dr. Ito.
Don't go far.
You know?
Look at the person he was talking to. She was trashed.
Yeah.
From up there, for all he cared to know, you know? So I think that that interaction of her discovering of the world held by the hand of Ugo also creates a big emotional bond between her and Ugo. You know? So she, and I mean, you see from the beginning, since Ugo introduced himself to her, that she kind of takes wings and go into La La Land, like, oh, Ugo. Like, she goes, oh, blah, blah on him. So she likes him. And I mean, they created a strong bond by him getting her around and teaching her things of the world that the doctor was not going to do. Because of how protective he is. So that makes her fall in love with him. And of course, what you do when you're in love with a person, you want to give him all you can to make their dream come true. So that's what she wants to do.
And another thing that, came to mind as you were explaining this is, you know about how people, you know, what we just said about the grass is greener on the other side. You know how Hugo was talking to the bad guy, or you know, one of the bad guys in this movie, about going up there and how he needed an X amount of money to buy his way up there, and he has this line that is a little deep, you know, is voiced by one of the bad guys, where he says, I'd rather be a king in hell than a servant in heaven.
Vector.
And that's a deep thought right there.
It is. It is. If you think about it, at the end of the day, if you think about it, there's a lot of primitive psychology into this movie. It's about humans setting themselves up in the chain of command when it comes to survival at a social level. He wouldn't be anybody up there. But down there, he's the freaking king.
So another thing that I was thinking when he said that is, like, Hugo should have known at this point that something must not be right. I mean, to go up there, become a servant, I mean, why would you want to go there? Might as well just stay here. And I mean, we eventually later learned that you can't really buy your way out anyways. But still, at that point, there should have been some red flags coming into your head saying, you know.
Yes and no, you know, because here's the thing. This is a mere analysis I made out of Ugo. Like, I dissected him as a character. And what he's doing for Vector, he's actually stripping people of their limbs to sell them and leave them to die or to be found to whoever can help them. You know? So he's already doing something that is very, very bad. I don't think that that's less bad than just killing a person, you know? So if you think about that, he's doing something very bad for Vector to try to buy his way up there. So when I saw that he's doing this, and then he doesn't think that he's doing something so bad, I already capture Ugo as a very naive person and as a lost boy. He's lost in his mind. I mean, he's blinded by the goal and he forgot about the journey. If you want to put it in a philosophical way. So he's literally doing whatever it takes to make that dream come true. So he's not being any better than any of the bad guys at the end of the day. He's a nice boy and everything. He's being good to Alita. But would it be the case that he doesn't know Alita ever? Alita might have been one of his victims.
If you put it in perspective, like percentage-wise, you know, what is the percentage of people that he is actually good to? Alita, maybe his friends, which is a small group. And what is the percentage of people that he does bad to? The entire city. So if you go by percentage, he is a bad guy. So
That's where they're saying that, one of my favorite sayings, they say, hell is full of good people. So, I mean, Ugo is just one more of them. And I mean, you can't help but feel sympathy for him because he's holding Alita's hand all along. But he's living a double life and he's lying to himself. He's lying to himself to a delusional point.
I think through the journey that we see him take on this movie, there is a point where he kind of sees the light.
Yes.
And he tries to get out.
But his foot was way too deep into the hole already.
Yes.
Like he was way beyond the turning point when he tried to turn around.
Yeah, and I always wonder too, because even if he's able to get out, there's just way too many people they have done so many bad things too.
Yeah.
That it makes you wonder, you know, will he be discovered eventually and accused? And you know what happens when you get accused? Or even at that, what is the psychology of that? I mean, because you could be doing things for the right reasons, as we can tell, you know, by for example, soldiers that are sent into war to defend their country, which is a very noble thing to do. And when they come back, PTSD.
Yeah.
So,
to what cost, right?
Exactly. So it makes you wonder. I mean, there's a lot of luggage in here.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, it would have given it a total different twist if it is like he's hunting down bad guys, which they don't really make it to the police, you know?
Exactly.
So he actually repurposed them. So chop his head off, use his body, farm it. But that's not the case. They are literally hunting down innocent people, preying on them, and then leaving them to die. So I mean, he's just one of the bad guys at the end of the day. Just shit went wrong for him.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think about it, that's one of the things that what he's doing, I don't feel like until he meets Alita, he feels the weight of what he's doing, which is kind of an ironic characteristic of many human beings, is that most of us don't really feel the sympathy or the gravity of something until we are directly affected. So it happens to us or it's happening to somebody I love.
Yes.
Most people, I'm not saying everybody's like that, but I've noticed it in my country, in the United States, in many places in the world, actually, that some people like kind of like brush it under the carpet when there's a very ugly issue, social issue that's going on. But the moment, and I've seen it, how it evolves in the person, but when it's affecting them, you see the change on their reaction to that issue.
And sometimes that reaction is due, what I like to say, cause and effect.
Yeah.
So the reason why I like to think that most or some people will act that way is because they feel that by acting differently, they might cause harm to them or their family. So they choose to ignore what's going on.
Look to the other direction.
Exactly. And it still doesn't make it any better. It's just sad.
And that's the thing. I mean, I know it might sound like a harsh judgment, but for me, it's mere ignorance. People do not realize, many, I'm not saying everybody's like this, but people do not realize not making a decision. They think, oh, okay, I'm not getting involved. Mm-hmm. They don't realize not making a decision, it still makes a decision.
Yeah, you're making a decision not to make an action or, you know.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, whatever the issue is, not getting involved, you become an enabler of the issue. Mm-hmm. So that's why the end solution is you're either with the enemy or you're gonna fight to make a difference to stop that issue from going on.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this movie is very complex in that way because you see a lot of bad guys in the movie. You see a lot of those are a product of society, a product of actions, reactions, and not everybody is a clean slate.
No.
And that's why I think Alita is such like a bright, you know, sunshine in this movie.
Yeah, she is.
Because, you know, even on her past, she was not, you know, what everybody else is, whatever you want to call that. She was, eventually we learned that she was a military soldier.
A berserker.
A berserker. That was actually one of the last attempt from the war 300 years ago, was it?
Yeah, 300 years.
300 years ago, where Earth and Mars were at war.
Mm-hmm.
And
I still wonder, so with how advanced fighters they were, it just does not make sense. I think that, I mean, I don't mean any insult to the writer and creator of this story, mm-hmm, but it just doesn't make sense to me that such advanced warriors just fall for humans.
Yeah.
I would have thought that they would have obliterated us.
Yeah. I was wondering about that too, because, I mean, you know, just the way that we see their last stand.
It was a suicide mission head on.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, and it makes you want to know more about that story.
Yeah.
And it's something that we don't have, and the original creator of the story have not created.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of hunger about this story.
Of course.
There's a lot of hunger about this story.
I think that I'm not sure if the creators of this story did realize that at some point. But creating this story is not just a story. They're creating a whole universe,
yes,
that comes with it. And unfortunately, we don't have all the parts of that universe. But we have a story that outlays the supposition of what happened before.
Okay, so if Robert Rodriguez or James Cameron are listening to this podcast, you know, TV show,
mm-hmm,
please. TV show.
Please, honestly. We assure you, it's going to be a total success.
There's so much.
I mean, guys, think about it. You guys made almost, what, 4 times what it cost you? So yeah. Imagine a TV show,
which
is becoming the main way to actually deliver films to the public now. So, I mean, no better time to pick than this.
Yeah. It's one of those. I think this is what's so genius about the original source material, and I'm sure that wasn't what they envisioned when they created it, but it's a happy accident.
Yes,
where they created this universe,
so full of possibilities,
and this movie actually opened up that universe even more, because when you watch original source material, you get a sense of the universe. But you don't get so involved until this movie explores into that universe.
Absolutely. I mean, you and I have discussed this before, but after watching the anime, which you actually had me watch first before we watched the movie,
mm-hmm,
the movie, again, does create closure and a lot of questions that are left open in the anime already.
Yes.
So that's why the possibilities of great material and great background story to be created is just exponential.
Yes. So yeah, it's just they opened up Pandora's box in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have a world. They could be, you know, I'm gonna say this, but this could be, it could be as big as Star Wars.
Yeah, honestly, you can make it. I mean, you can create a whole series just about the origins of how these Martians came to be. What's their ancestry? Their ways, where they come from.
How Alita became a berserker. Mm-hmm. You know, where she's from. Who are their parents?
Where was she born? How was she created?
Exactly.
You know? What were the customs in Mars?
Because we know she's human. So she was born at what point? At one point. I mean, was she born and something happened to her where the only thing they could say was the brain and they
Was she made like that?
Exactly. So there's a lot.
A war. We don't even know why the war was it, you know?
Exactly.
Anything. What was the treaty between Earth and Mars before you went to rupture? So yeah, there's a whole universe.
Could this be the continuation to, you know, the Expanse?
Yeah. I mean, it will be sad. I mean, there's some good Martians. But I mean, the story, again, going back to the main story, the story develops beautifully. She gets into a second fight with this giant guy that she saved the doctor from at the beginning.
Gryska, I think
it's Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of funny because she walks into, like, a robotic girl walks into a bar. Joke. That's kind of what it is. She literally does that. And then she just goes provoking all the Hunter's Layers because this is the lair with all the Hunter's Layers hang around. And of course, they are loners. So even though they all hang around here, they all hate each other. And they literally fight each other for the heads they hunt.
Yes.
And then she comes with a little girl. Happy, let's hold hands.
Yeah, let's fight this bad guy. Let's join together. Let's join hands and destroy this person. It's all our enemies.
Exactly. And it's kind of sardonic. And then at the same time, she's kind of right.
Yeah.
Because it's like, this guy is bad. He's hunting me now. And you don't care until you are under the bullseye.
The same thing you were talking about. You don't care until it's happening to you. Eventually, exactly. It's going to happen to everyone in that bar.
Exactly.
Because this guy doesn't really care about you.
Yeah. But here's the funnier thing, is that she goes into a bar, she provokes the people and tries to rout them to like join her cause. They laugh at her, but she's the most badass fighter in the whole bar.
Yeah.
She literally just takes on the whole freaking bar and gets them down on their knees.
That was awesome,
holy shit, man.
That was an awesome scene, especially when the fight starts.
Mm-hmm.
When he's provoking, what was his name? I forgot his name now.
Pretty face boy,
yeah,
I call
him. Yeah, pretty face. Yeah, it's always about, oh, my face.
So, I mean, that's everything he has. Everything else is just stealing his body.
I just love what she did. She's the guy just was a grabser.
Yeah.
And she just grabs her head and smashes face on the freaking table.
And disarms him because he's swinging this blade that is Martian too.
Uh-huh.
That it seems that cuts anything. Like the blade looks like a freaking artifact, like a legendary artifact, literally.
And it's amazing because you can see when she gets the other body, which was actually a discovery by her and by Ugo. There was a Martian ship underwater.
Yeah, and a wreckage.
That's when we first discovered that she is definitely connected with Martians, because as soon as she walks inside that ship, everything reacts to her, like if it belongs to her. And she gets this body from her. This is the one that Dr. Ido basically installs on her after she destroys the original. But when she grabs that sword from this pretty boy,
it just lights up.
You can see that it connects to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology is meant to be used together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, after that, it just becomes a witch hunt on making sure that everybody gets stung. And the funny thing is that in that bar fight, the only person that got involved is the guy that has the cyborg dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Because she had this doggy following her all the show. And then Grishna goes and slices the little doggy like salami.
Yeah. Which, by the way, you know, you don't see this in the movie. If you see the anime, you will definitely see it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was kind of glad. You know, no one wants to see a puppy die.
No.
He definitely dies, but you don't get to see it. All you see is a small puddle of blood where Alita just picks up and
paints her eyes.
Paints her eyes and starts the battle.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's when it starts the good thing, because that's when her John Wick instincts get awakened. Yeah. And she becomes the devil.
You kill my dog!
Honestly, man, after she got sliced up, she still took on the guy with just one arm.
That was a badass scene.
I was like, holy shit, man.
There was a scene after this thing, you know, Grishka opens up a hole in the bar, and they both ended up on
underground. Yeah.
So to make the long story short on that fight, which, by the way, I shouldn't even explain it. You should just watch it. It's amazing. There's a scene where she is going for him. And Grishka has these fingers that are, you know,
like flying snake blades.
Yeah, they're kind of, the best thing that I can explain it is like, you know, those machines that you use to cut wood, right?
Yeah.
So there's five of them going in a circular motion around her. And just when she's about to hit Grishka, she gets cut into little pieces to where the only thing left was, you know,
the upper torso and her right arm, I think.
And the right arm. So that, in that moment, you think, okay.
She's done.
That's it. She's done. And she, you know, even worse, you know, Grishka just
picks her up by the hair.
By the hair. And all you see her is, you know, like a wounded animal, just mm-hmm. like, you know, like this, him. And he's getting ready to do the final block.
And then she just goes like, let me pick your brain.
And she, what was it that she did? And he released them. And she's in the ground. She's on that one arm. She goes down, and you can tell that she's about to jump, and you have no idea what's going to happen. And she, you could tell that she's kind of counting, like sensing how far is Grishka. He's coming.
No. Grishka has her on his face, hold by the head.
Yeah, but after release.
And she goes like, fuck your whatever. And she literally just stucks her whole hand in his eyeball.
That's after.
Really?
She's on the ground. She's on her one leg, and she goes like this. You can tell that she's about to jump. And when he's close enough, she jumps up in the air. It does this weird flip, and he goes right through him.
Oh, I thought that she actually did that when he was holding her in his face.
That thing.
Because she actually broke her hand inside of his eye socket.
Exactly. And
but it was fucking badass, man.
Yes. You don't take our word for it. Just watch that scene.
Oh my God.
That was an amazing scene. And then, you know, because, I mean, you think that's it. You think, you know, she's done for. And now she comes up with this thing with a body that is not military grade.
No.
And she does this kind of damage.
It's what I'm telling you. Her body's made in a way and portrayed in a way. It looks like porcelain.
Yes. Yes.
Literally, when you look at her body the first time, what I feel is like this body's made out of the China stuff that nobody wants to use with the visit.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like. But at the same time, by her destroying that body, she got the perfect excuse because Dr. Iroh didn't want to put her on the berserker body.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm not going to put you in that freaking mass destruction weapon. But they're like, oh, you're screwed for it. Now you got to put me in my body.
And it's kind of like poetic justice when he says, like, you know, after he finished that with the body, and he's like, well, now no one will be able to do damage on you.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, the reason why she wanted it in the first place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this movie was amazing. And I still find it odd that you'd never seen it before. Well, I guess I can understand the movie because initially you were not really a sci-fi. You know, you just watch movies.
I watch good movies and that's it, but I was not concentrating on sci-fi. I mean, don't go far. I never watched Pacific Rim before you told me about it. Mm-hmm. I knew that it existed. Never watched it.
Yeah. But, you know, the one that I wonder harder is the anime. Because you have brought up some good anime that I have never watched that are from my time. And this is definitely from my time, and you have never watched that. So it makes me wonder.
But it's what I have explained to you too before. Like in Dominican Republic, the selection of what you watch for anime, it's not very extensive. The mm-hmm. market is more open here, and still, you know that we don't get to see as much stuff like from where it comes from, Japan.
Yeah.
So in Dominican Republic, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't even make it up there because of translation, and we don't really watch something over there if it's not dubbed, at least.
Yeah.
Most of the things, they're not dubbed. They're actually not subbed even. So we don't get to watch it if it's not even subbed in Spanish.
Yeah, there's no sense. I mean, if you don't understand it, you know?
And I don't think that Elite is one of those things.
No, it's, yeah. It is very obscure.
And yeah,
that's one thing that I find, because even I remember talking to some of my friends when this movie was announced and there was a trailer. And it's like, oh my God, I'm so excited because they're making a live action of this anime, and people was like, that was an anime? And it's like, yeah, and I had to go and, you know, searching YouTube and send people links, and they're like, oh my God, yeah, you're right, it was an anime. So I think it's one of those that's very obscure,
but it's a must watch.
Yeah. And if you have the chance to look this up in YouTube and watch the original, even if you watched the movie already, or if you haven't watched the movie and you're planning to watch it, I recommend at one point or another watch the anime. And you'll see, you know, what I'm talking about.
And I agree with you. I think that it's a must do. Whichever you watch first, watch the other one. Again, the beauty of it is that each one of them, the anime and the movie, they have complete parts of the story that the other one doesn't have.
Yes.
So questions that you might have because of the movie are answered in the anime, and questions that you have because of the anime are answered in the movie. So either or that you watch is just going to enhance your experience about Battle Alita Angel.
Yeah, Alita Battle Angel, Battle Angel, whichever you want to call it. But the one thing that I want to say is, if you still have questions after watching both, then you need to reach out to Roberto Rodriguez and James Cameron and ask for a part two.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I mean, hit us up in our Discord. Again, our channel is always open for discussion. We love discussing about stuff that we love watching. So if it's science fiction, we're the place to go.
Yeah, and we're on Twitter also, a Sci-Fi Remnant. We're very active there. So, you know, reach us out. You know, let's have a discussion either way. Do let us know if you never watched this, or if you never watched the anime, if you never watched the movie, or if you never knew about the story you went together and you get to see it. Let us know what you think. I'm really curious to think, to know what you guys think about it.
Yeah.
Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you liked this episode.
And let us know if you have any idea about which topics you would like us to discuss in our next episodes.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant. And if you like this podcast, share it.
And don't forget to rate us in your favorite podcast platform. This will help us grow. Thank you.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off.